Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, Denny Griffin here, and welcome to a special edition of Las Vegas and the Mob. Today we're going to be talking about a 1981 homicide that took place in Lakemore, Illinois. It's about 45 miles outside of Chicago. And before I introduce my guests, I want to give you a little bit of background on what occurred on June 2nd of 1981. Two people were found shot to death in the living room of an apartment at the rear of the PM Pub, located at 238 West Rand Road in Lakemore, Illinois. The victims were the tavern's owner, 37-year-old Ronald Scharf, and barmaid Patricia Freeman, who had worked her first shift at the bar the previous evening. Lakemore was a community of around 800 at that time, and these were the first reported homicides there since its incorporation in 1952. Shortly after the killings, McHenry County Sheriff's investigators had a couple of suspects in the slayings. Jim Hager, a friend of Ron Scharf, advised them that if they wanted to solve the murders, they should look at either Freeman's boyfriend or a guy named Larry Newman. The latter was a McHenry County man then living in Las Vegas. Newman was a burglar, robber, arsonist, and all-around tough guy, and he was working for Chicago outfit enforcer Tony Spilotro's crew in Sin City. Newman had previously been convicted of a 1956 triple murder in Illinois, and although he received a sentence of 125 years, he had miraculously been paroled after serving only about 16. Hager had thrown Newman's name into the mix because he had witnessed an altercation between Ron Scharf and Newman's ex-wife, in which Scharf evicted the woman from his bar. Hager felt that to a guy like Newman, that incident could be construed to be a personal insult demanding redress. And first, I'd like to introduce you to Ron Scharf's son, Paul Scharf. Paul, welcome to Las Vegas and the Mob.
Hi, Denny. Thanks for having me.
Going through this background on what happened back in 1981. Now, I'm correct in saying that from that time, and you were just a young boy at that point, through earlier this year, you didn't know the identity of the person who killed your father. Is that accurate?
That's correct.
Okay. And something happened earlier this year that we think, or you think, has provided that information. Can you tell us a little bit about exactly how you came across the name of the alleged killer?
Sure. Actually, I didn't. It was my former babysitter that actually pulled this all together. Her son and her father were traveling together in a car, and Jim's known for telling great stories, so you know, they were starting to tell stories because they couldn't agree on a radio station. And Holly brought up my father's murder and asked her father who he thought may have done it. And he mentioned two people. One was, I believe, Pat's former boyfriend, and the other one was Larry Newman. And so Holly went to work with Larry Newman, and she started Googling him up right away. And immediately he was coming up that he was from McHenry and that he was definitely a murderer, a robber, arsonist. And so she kept on Googling on him, and eventually she got him to the book Collada. So she immediately ran out, got the book Collada, and read it from page to page. And then she grabbed all the information that she had, and she provided it to her father, basically asking him, tell me why this is not the guy. And Jim looked at the information, and then Jim was ultimately the one that who called me, and he explained to me everything that was going on, and then, you know, I immediately went out, got the book, and came to my conclusion that this was truly it, that Larry Newman was the murderer of my father and Patricia Freeman.
Okay, so this came about almost as a coincidence, that Newman's name, you know, that Holly Googled the name of Larry Newman and ended up finding the book Collada. Now,
yep.
for the sake of any the listeners, in case you're wondering what Collada is, Collada is the biography of a former mobster who worked, well, he was a native of Chicago and then eventually ended up in Las Vegas in the late 70s. And his name is Frank Collada. And Frank had a long history with a man named Tony Spilotro, who was a Chicago outfit enforcer sent out to Vegas to help keep an eye on the mob's, on the outfit's interests in Las Vegas. And Frank was what's commonly referred to as a lieutenant in Spilotro's gang, and he organized a crew of burglars, robbers, arsonists, and killers, which became known in Las Vegas as the Hole in the Wall Gang. And Frank ended up having a falling out with Spilotro, and in 1982, he turned government witness and entered the Witness Protection Program. And in 2007, Frank's biography called Collada came out, and one of the incidents that Frank wrote about in his book was the 1981 murder of Paul Scharf and Pat, or excuse me, Ron Scharf and Pat Freeman. And that's what Mr. Scharf is referring to from the book Collada. And I have joining me tonight and joining Paul is Frank Collada himself. Frank, welcome to Las Vegas and the Mob.
Hello, Denny.
And you've never spoken with Paul Scharf before. He's on the line with us if you want to say hello to him.
How you doing, Paul?
Hey, I'm doing pretty good, Mr. Collada. How about yourself?
Okay.
Good.
So in the book, the names of Paul or Ron Scharf and Pat Freeman were not used. The incident is described as occurring in a Chicago suburb and so on and so forth. And as Paul said, his former babysitter and his father's friend, Jim Hager, read that particular section and determined that the circumstances were describing, in fact, the murder of Ron and Pat Freeman. Frank, now you, of course, one of the people who you were involved with in Las Vegas and who you had known earlier through meeting him in prison was Larry Newman, is that right?
That's correct. We're in the state penitentiary together.
Could you give us a little background on Newman, what type of guy he was and so on?
Bottom line was he was a very violent individual. He was actually had an IQ that was very, very high. He was a very intelligent man, but he had a very short wick. And he was capable of multiple murders at any time, as if he went off the handle, you know.
Mm-hmm.
He was uncontrollable. And he did work for me. And as you mentioned, I worked for Tony, so this was part of my crew.
After you and Tony had your falling out and you became a government witness, one of the things you were required to do, I believe, as part of your agreement with the government, was that you had to be debriefed and basically tell what you knew about not only Tony, but other members of the crew or other
That's
organized
correct.
Crime figures. And as I recall from earlier conversations, one of the deals was if you were caught either holding back or not telling the truth, that could cause the whole deal to go belly up, and then you would have been facing some serious jail time. Am I correct on that?
Yes, sure.
Okay. And in the book, you mention an incident that took place. You ran and owned a business in Las Vegas called the Upper Crust Restaurant. And one day when you were in there with some of your colleagues, including Larry Newman, he received a phone call. Could you tell us a little bit about that phone call or what happened after he got off the phone?
Well, Larry received the phone call, and I didn't know who it was at that time. But as soon as he hung up, he was ranting and raving. I said, what's the problem? and he told me that his ex-wife, Debbie, and I don't know her last name, I knew her, I met her, had an altercation in one of them saloons or towns, taverns in a little lake town out there in McHenry. I call it McHenry. And he said that, I asked him, well, what happened? And he told me that the owner of the place, he didn't mention any names at the time, so I didn't know the name. He says, had grabbed his wife by the throat and threw her out of the lounge. So I says, Larry, you're not married to her no more. What are you worried about? Just forget about it. And he says, no. He said, the guy that's disrespect. I said, you know this guy? He said, yeah. You know him real well? He said, yeah. I said, but Larry, you're not married to her. Just forget about it. You're not getting the okay on this. And I finally thought that I had him calm down enough. Actually, we talked for a great length. I'd say at least an hour, hour, 2 hours. And within that time, I thought I calmed him down.
And when you told him he wasn't getting the okay, I'm assuming you mean that a protocol rule.
I was not authorizing him to do something. When you work in the outfit, you usually have to get okays to commit certain, you know, like murders.
Right.
You just can't go around killing anybody at random.
Right.
It has to be justified in let's say, our eyes. So he swore up and down that he wasn't going to do anything.
Okay, so you thought, at least at the moment, that you kind of had him talked out of taking any further action?
He had me convinced. Yeah, he had me convinced.
Okay. Now, after you became a government witness, you related this information to a special FBI agent, FBI special agent who was debriefing you, named Dennis Arnoldy. Is that correct?
Yes, I did.
And
we had to talk about all the crimes that we'd done or we were involved in or knew about. And I didn't have to say anything about that because chances of them ever finding that out would have probably been slim and none. But I was honest with everything, and I let them know that.
Okay, and at some point, did someone from McHenry County come and talk to you? Now, you were in San Diego at the time in a federal lockup. And did someone actually come out and interview you or speak with you about the Scharf murders?
Yeah, two men come out. I think one was a cop and the other one was a prosecutor. I'm not sure. That was quite a while ago, but I know there were law enforcement people. And also present was Arnoldy and another cop by the name of Dave Groover. Arnoldy was FBI agent, and Groover worked for Metro.
Okay.
And I believe they were, I know Arnoldy was in the room for sure. And they asked me questions about this murder. And Lakemore, is that what you call it? Lakemore? I call it McHenry.
Correct.
Anyway, because I didn't know the difference. You know, I just know he was going back to McHenry County.
Now, we have, I believe, on the phone just right now, the FBI agent, Dennis Arnoldy. Are you there, Mr. Arnoldy? Mr. Arnoldy? Okay, it showed he was on the line. We'll try to get him back on. Who have I got from the 815 area code?
That sounds like McHenry.
Yeah, that's McHenry.
Okay, can you hold on just a minute, please, and we'll get right back to you. Okay, so now we have...
I think it's Holly.
Hey!
Okay. Hi, Holly. I'll be with you in just a second. So now we have McHenry County authorities having been informed through Frank Collada and with an FBI agent also involved.
Hey, can I get involved in this a little bit here and tell you? They questioned me as much as they could, and I gave them all the information that I had, and they seemed very disinterested. And after the conversation, I think I told one of the policemen, these guys don't look like they're too enthused. They don't look like they believe me. I said, but, you know, I got nothing to lie about. I tell them like it was. And that was the end of the conversation.
And that's the last you heard from McHenry County as far
from
as...
From them, yeah. I never heard a word more about it, any more about it.
And this would have been, what, 1982, right?
Yeah.
So it
I was locked up in the... I was locked up then.
Okay, so about a year after the murders took place, so it was relatively current, you know what I mean, current information. Now we have here Holly. Holly, how are you?
I'm fine.
Thanks for calling in. And you are the babysitter that Paul was referring to, right, that Googled Mr. Newman's name and
I did.
Pallotta.
Yes.
Did you kind of know as soon as you came to that section of the book that it was probably Ron Scharf's murder that was being...
You know what? I didn't hear the beginning of your show. I missed the first few minutes, so I don't know what Paul had said. But, yeah, my dad had thrown out a few names. I was talking to my dad, and the subject always comes up about Ron's murder, and... He said who he thought might have done it, and that was one of the names he threw out, but he said he really didn't think Larry would have done that because he was friends with them. But when I came home from dropping my dad off at his place in Arkansas, I came home and I started Googling Larry Newman's name, and first a serial killer site came up, which I thought this can't be the same guy, but it said he was from McHenry. I thought, oh, my gosh, that's the same Larry Newman guy. And then... I came to the Collada book, and an excerpt out of the book had that story in it that referred to Larry Newman, and I just stopped for a second. I couldn't believe it because it was right there in black and white. The names weren't mentioned, but I knew exactly who it was, and I know, you know, where it happened and what happened, and that just answered it. And it's been such a question in everybody's mind in this whole area for 27 years, you know, because... You know, so many different people have so many different theories, and it was all right there, and I just couldn't believe it.
Hey, Holly, let me interrupt you for just a second. I see we have, I believe, Mr. Arnoldy on the line now, and he only has a few minutes for us, so let me get to him. Mr. Arnoldy, are you with us?
I am, Denny. How are you tonight?
Good. I have on the line also, I have Frank Collada, Paul Scharf, and Holly Hager. And
hello to all of you. How are you doing, Frank?
Okay, Dennis.
Hi.
How you doing, Mr. Arnoldy?
Very good. You?
I'm doing well. Thank you.
I don't know, Ms. Arnold, if you were able to. You probably didn't hear the first part of this. Excuse me. We were discussing the 1981 murder of Ron Scharf and his barmaid, Pat Freeman. And then we were discussing how Frank became involved in providing information to McHenry County authorities after he became a government witness in 1982, approximately a year after the killings took place in Lakemore, Illinois. And you were involved in debriefing Frank back in 82. And he told you, I guess was required as part of his agreement to divulge, you know, what he knew about not only Tony Spilotro, but other players as well. And one of the things he told you was about this McHenry County double homicide that Newman was involved in. And eventually a couple of representatives from McHenry County came to where Frank was locked up in San Diego to actually interview him and get the information. Do you recall that's kind of the way this came down?
Yeah, everything you said is correct. Frank was debriefed by me and Dave Groover of the police department, and he did bring this up on his own. Probably we wouldn't have been able to connect it without his information. And we did indeed meet with representatives from McHenry County. I cannot recall all the details. I'm very sure it was down in San Diego. And I met with a person I believe was a state prosecutor of some type. And we discussed the matter. I wouldn't say they were not enthusiastic, but they didn't seem, the fellow I talked to, I kind of left there not thinking that they were too enthusiastic about it, but that's not unusual.
So the main point, I think, here is that this was a letter was faxed off or sent off through the mail that they may or may not have received. We know that they definitely got the information firsthand.
Well, right. Certainly, and they would have been notified through the Chicago FBI originally. I'm sure we notified Chicago and that they notified the local authorities before they came out and talked to us. I don't know that we would have called them directly, but certainly the Chicago office of the FBI would have spoken with them.
Okay, and this question, Mr. Arnold, will be for you and for Frank. Did either of you ever hear that Larry Newman was actually questioned, you know, after this information was passed on, that he was actually interrogated or interviewed by the McHenry County authorities to see if he had any involvement in the in those homicides?
Well, speaking for myself, I don't believe I ever heard another word out of it except, as you know, that showed up in a newspaper article out here. We had so much going on at the time, it wasn't something that I could, you know, closely follow. But I don't recall Larry ever being interviewed by anybody. It may have. I just don't recall ever hearing that.
Okay. And, Frank, did you ever hear if Larry was brought in for questioning about those murders?
Never heard a word.
After they left me,
I never heard from him again.
Okay.
And you know, Frank, at that time, I don't know what Larry's status was. Was he here in jail?
He was locked up for a gun or something, yeah.
Yeah. I'm not even sure he was back that way, Denny.
No, he was being held for that murder, for the Brown murder.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, all of that is, you know, in my memory is all going together, but... he was a subject of another murder and a gun charge out here. So I'm not quite sure where he was at the time, but certainly he was available at least to try to contact.
Yeah, I would think. And you say Dave Groover, a former Metro officer, was also involved
in
the debriefings and so on.
Certainly. Metro was hand-in-hand with us.
And another thing of interest, in addition to the information that Frank provided and then was relayed or he gave to McHenry County people, was apparently when Newman went back to Illinois from Vegas, he had another fellow with him, and a young fellow named Tommy. And it turned out that although Tommy was not involved, nobody alleges that he had any knowledge of what Larry was going to do, that he, in fact... was in the car outside the bar when the killings went down, and that he drove Newman around after the murders, and they eventually stopped somewhere, and Newman threw the gun, the murder weapon, into some water or a lake or a pond or whatever. And the very next night, according to a newspaper article, McHenry County police stopped a vehicle for, I don't know what the reason was, apparently... some kind of a minor beef, and stopped the vehicle, and in the vehicle was Newman's brother-in-law and this Tommy guy. And a report was taken. In fact, they were detained for a short period of time, and there was a report on file at the police department placing this Tommy in the vicinity of Lakemore when the murders took place. And Tommy, I understand, gave an told that to Detective Groover, and Detective Groover issued an affidavit stating those facts. So it seems as though there was at least ample probable cause to want to talk to Mr. Newman. Am I overstating that, or would you say there probably was reason to at least have him in for a chat?
Well, I certainly believe if I had been handling the matter, that I would have certainly attempted to speak to him. Of course, he could have refused to talk at that point, but and maybe they did. I don't know what McHenry did in this situation, but certainly there was enough there to talk to Larry.
He didn't do anything.
Could I say something?
Certainly.
Go ahead, Holly.
It was interesting to me that my dad doesn't know anybody from the FBI or anybody. He just knew Larry on a personal level from the area. And my dad, McHenry County prosecutors, picked my dad up to question him, and he gave them Larry Newman's name. So they not only had the name from the FBI, they had the name from my dad, who
doesn't
even know any of those people. So why wouldn't they question him?
The way that I look at it, it seems like there's three independent sources all kind of going down to the same thing. So, you know, I'm questioning what was really going on.
It does seem weird, I got to say that. You know, like Mr. Arnold said, maybe they did do something and just nobody knows about it. I mean, I haven't talked to the McHenry County folks, but
you know what?
They wouldn't have done anything.
You're right. I think we
would have called me in right away.
Yeah, and they would have called Frank for sure. They probably would have gotten back to me too.
I'm the only one that knew, for crying out loud.
Exactly right.
The time.
Well, my mom, the newspaper article that Frank alluded to, my mom either heard about it or read about it. And she contacted Detective Hendel, who was handling the case at, in McHenry County at the time. And basically, he kind of just debunked it as, you know, like she read it out of the Inquirer. And told her not to worry about that information, that he would provide her with the direct information, never mentioning that McHenry County traveled to San Diego, not less to mention Frank or Dennis or anybody else.
Is that right? They didn't even bring that up, huh?
No, not at all. And my mom confronted them, you know, asking, you know, is my husband's murder solved? And basically she got, you know, don't read the papers, you know, I'll tell you what it is that you need to know.
And that makes it doubly interesting here, because there was a newspaper article in the paper here back, I think probably in 82, certainly after your dad's death, and, you know, they even mentioned talking to Hendel or... all that good stuff, you know. So it wasn't like he wasn't aware of it.
And that's what was kind of presented to my mother. So, you know, that's kind of questionable.
And they debunked the FBI's information in this article, too, and said that they had fed us bad information back that was bad information. I don't know when they were supposed to do that. And why would a police department do that? I have no idea. You know, just trying to catch us, I guess. I don't know what their purpose was.
So it appears, based on what we know, that McHenry County officials never treated this information, including when Holly's dad gave him Newman's name and then what happened with Frank's information. They never treated it with any real credence, did they? At least it doesn't appear they did.
Not from my knowledge.
What is Officer Hendel still around?
He later became Sheriff Hendel. His father was the sheriff of McHenry County prior to him.
Okay.
As far as I can tell, he's still around, but he's certainly not active as a sheriff anymore.
I got you. Okay.
Now, Mr. Ironley, I know you had some other commitments. Are you going to have to leave? Or?
Probably will pretty soon. Probably will have to pretty soon.
Okay, well, in case you have to go, I want to thank you for calling in and being on with us. And, I certainly appreciate it.
Well, I'm happy to do it, and Paul, I hope it all goes well for you.
Me too.
And I can tell you this much, Frank Collada testified and gave his information and testified about a lot of things. It led to a lot of convictions all around this country, and he never lied, he never embellished, and...
had nothing to gain by talking about that.
Absolutely not. He had everything to lose. Yeah, and he was a great witness. And tell you the truth, I'll take anything he says to the bank. And I know he's not lying about this. And I'm sorry more wasn't done at the time.
Yeah, no, I am too. And I hope we do go ahead and we get one more under Frank's name and get Larry Newman named as the killer of my father and Patricia Freeman.
Yeah, that would be at least good for you all. And anything we can do to help you, let me know. And I'll sign off now, Denny, if you don't mind. And Frank, and it's Holly, right? And Paul,
yes.
It was a pleasure talking with all of you. And if you need anything from me in the future, get hold of me through Denny, and we'll handle it.
All right. Well, thank you very much for that, Mr. Arnoldy. I appreciate it very much.
My pleasure. We'll see you all now. Goodbye.
All right.
Bye,
bye,
Denny.
Bye-bye.
Okay, let me... I want to turn back to Holly for a moment here. Holly, so when you were, now you would Google Newman's name and so on and so forth. You had some background on him, and your dad had said that he thought Newman was probably a good bet for being involved in.
Actually, what had happened was, you know, my dad is supposed to be calling. I just tracked him down 20 minutes ago, and he said he would go home and call, so you could... If he does, you can talk to him.
I have another caller on the line. It might be him. Let me just answer the phone right now. Hello, you're on the line.
Hello.
That's him.
And who? Is that him? Okay. Jim, how you doing?
Oh, pretty good.
Thanks for calling in. I'll get to you in just a minute, okay? I'll just finish up with the question with Holly, and then we'll be back to you.
Okay.
Okay? So, Holly, when you read the Collada book and you recognized the circumstances, even though the names of the victims weren't mentioned, were you surprised, or did it have any effect on you, or did you say, holy mackerel?
It totally did. It was like I just sat there still for a minute. I couldn't believe it because it was a big, huge it just revealed everything. And there was, like, not a doubt in my mind that that's who it was. You know what I mean? It solved something that crosses everybody's minds in this area, you know, all the time for the last,
yeah,
you know, 27 years. It was, like, it was a big deal. And it was
I
never solved. And everybody always
said it.
Yeah, everybody always said, gosh, I wonder whoever done that. How come they never solved it? My sister had called, my sister Heidi called McHenry County Police Department. When I said, I of course ordered the book and read it, and I was telling my sisters, Heidi and Bailey, I solved the murder. And they're like, yeah, whatever. I said, no, really. I read this book. And they're like, yeah, whatever. And then a couple weeks later, my sister Heidi calls. She goes, Holly, you solved the murder. I said, I told you guys that. She called McHenry County. She calls McHenry County to ask if this was still an unsolved case. And she talked to some lady at the office, at the detective's office, and they said, we don't have any unsolved murders in McHenry County. So Heidi called me back. She goes, Holly, what was Ron's last name? And I said, Scharf. So she called back again, and then they put her on the phone with the detective who said, yes, as a matter of fact, that case was never solved. She says, well, you know, you need to get a hold of this book, and I do believe McHenry County has read your book, and so I do think they probably know who did it now.
Oh, well, good. What do you think of that, Frank? Maybe we get the police interested in reading your book.
It took a lot of years, didn't it?
Yeah. It's almost like, you know, yeah, put it right in front of them and, you know, and point them to it.
It's sad in a way, you know.
Yeah.
Jim, again, thanks for calling in. We have, of course, on the line Holly, Paul, and Frank Collada. And we just, Dennis Arnley was just on with us. He was the retired FBI agent who helped to debrief Frank back in 1982. Now, we were saying, and Holly was saying, and Paul, that you, shortly after the murders in 81, that you gave investigating police officers Newman's name as a possible suspect. And what, now, you knew Newman? You knew him from the bar? Or you knew him from somewhere?
Well, just around the bar, yeah.
Okay. And his wife, or ex-wife, I guess it is Debbie, she used to hang out there too, apparently.
Yeah, but...
Newman, when Newman received a phone call at Frank's restaurant from Debbie, she apparently told him that Ron Scharf had evicted her from his bar, and that he had grabbed her by the neck or grabbed her by the throat. Were you there when this?
I was there the night it happened, and you know what? I never seen him grab her by the throat or nothing. I know they were cussing each other out and everything, and he told her to get the hell out of the bar and don't come back. You know,
was Debbie a regular in the bar? Was she there frequently?
No, she's come in on weekends, Friday or Saturday night once in a while. That was about it.
Did she have a reputation as kind of a troublemaker or anything, or was she?
Oh yeah, she had a big mouth, and Ron told me that. The argument was over in the first place. Ron knew about Larry. He knew his reputation and everything, you know. And he didn't want no trouble with Larry. And she was always trying to throw the mech on him and shit, you know. And he just said, stay away from me and stay the hell out of my bar.
Huh.
And, that was the argument, but I'd never seen him grab her by the throat or anything like that, yeah. You know? And I was sitting
right
there.
She knew the right buttons to push. She knew the right buttons to push to get Larry mad.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Now, after Jim, after you gave the investigators Newman's name, did they ever re-interview you about him or tell you that they had picked him up?
They never said nothing.
Nothing.
No.
Okay. Paul, now that you know, or even though the case is still officially open, is unsolved, now that we have a pretty good idea who the killer probably, I mean, everything seems to match as far as all evidence. What would you like to see done, or what are your intentions from here on?
What I would like to see done is definitely to have Larry Newman named as the murderer of my father and Patricia Freeman. This is really important, you know, not just to my family, but to Patricia's family as well. There's a lot of family members in Lakemore. I would guess half the community was related to Patricia in some way or fashion. And a lot of people are still devastated by that day. And that's the one thing that I've really learned a lot about going through this the second time as an adult and talking to a lot of people. You don't get the idea that it's 27 years ago. You know, you get the idea that it was something recent in the past. And it's incredibly important. One, first, that, you know, that your community did care. Because with this going on the way it has, it seems like your community didn't care. And second, a lot of people need to, you know, I don't want to use closure, but I don't know what else to say. They need that closure. They need to press on. There's a few people that are stuck on that day, and they're not moving forward. And they're having very bad lives. And this needs to get fixed.
You were telling me earlier that one girl in particular was really devastated and really had a tremendous impact on her life from there on out.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a rather sad, you know, story. Very unfortunate.
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to tell anybody's story unless they tell me that I can or they're
sure.
willing to tell it themselves. But the thing that really it choked me up learning about some of what some family members had to contend with over the years, and it's heartbreaking. I mean, their lives were absolutely devastated. I mean, I just couldn't imagine being tormented for 27 years, but there certainly were people that were tormented by this, and I know what it was for my family. You know, it was incredibly tough. It was devastating. And just this needs to get fixed. You know, there's people out there still being victimized by this. And
sure.
It's got to stop.
What is your next step? What do you have to do now? Like call the McHenry County people, or have they tried to contact you or been in touch with
no.
Jim or Holly or anybody?
No, they haven't been trying to get in touch with me. I would imagine they haven't been trying to get in touch with anybody.
Actually, they were trying to. They wanted me and Heidi to come in there because when Heidi called, and then you know it sparked
yeah,
their interest, and. Actually, I went there yesterday because I got a call saying that, which I don't know where the rumor started. They said it was a rumor that Mr. Griffin was in Woodstock in McHenry County, the author of the Collada book. And I thought maybe that McHenry County, you know, was really going to do something with it. And I talked to, I don't remember the guy's name, but he said he had read the book because my sister Heidi had called and said, you know, she, and I knew that PJ, Paul wasn't ready to, you know, didn't want to, like, call McHenry County and tell them everything because they've had 27 years to solve this crime and they really had no intention on doing it. And so I told Heidi that, you know, I didn't want to meet with them. But she had said, you guys have the information there in your files. You've had it all this time, so you need to just look harder and, you know, read this book. And so I guess that's what they've done now. So I don't know what they plan on doing, but they do know the facts.
Just for clarification, so nobody's confused, when Holly indicated that they somehow thought I was in McHenry County, I'm not. I'm in Las Vegas, but... my name, Frank, I co-authored Frank's book with him, so my name would show up on that also. But certainly no one's tried to get a hold of me and to see if maybe I could hook them up with Frank if that's what they want to do. But my information would be in the book, I mean, through the publisher or something. They could get a hold of me if they
I got a hold of you.
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, I'm not that hard to find. But that's interesting. So they have apparently got the book and read it, and they did want to talk to you and Heidi. Is that the...
Yes. At least one person has read the book, with the police department. So I don't know. I don't know what they wait for. I don't know.
Paul, what do you have in the works now to proceed with this? I think that you may have something coming up with some media to possibly get the story out there. Is that accurate?
Yeah, that is true. I'm going to be meeting up with Carol Maureen, who is a big-time Chicago news reporter, has definitely taken an interest in the Chicago outfit and has reported them over the last, I would guess, almost 30 years. And so she will be doing an interview with me next week for a show to air in Chicago, I believe, on the 24th.
The 24th of this month?
Correct.
Okay, yeah, I've heard of her, and she has quite a reputation there in that area. Is she going to be talking, to Holly or to Jim or anybody else that you're aware of?
Well, I know that I'm flying back to Chicago. I don't know if Jim's going to try to get back to Chicago, but if we're all together and available, certainly we'll talk. We'll all talk to her.
Well, it's really, an intriguing thing. I'm assuming that whoever talked to Holly from the police department or Heidi and has read the book and so forth probably is not the original detective assigned to the case. I'm just guessing that they're whoever.
No, it's not.
Yeah, so we have a new blood probably.
Mm-hmm.
They will be trying to check this out and see what there is to it. Now, and one thing I don't think we have mentioned, Larry Newman died in January of 2007 in prison in Illinois. And that came about as, in fact, a result of Frank Collada's testimony. Frank testified that Newman had murdered a jeweler in Chicago. That testimony got Mr. Newman, a life sentence. With no parole, and he did die of natural causes in prison last January. So it's a little too late to question him at this point. Jim, what do you think if Carol Marin or someone else contacted you to pursue
this? Excuse me a minute, I gotta go. Denny, I gotta go.
Okay, Frank, thanks a million for calling in.
Okay,
appreciate
Paul, I'm
it.
Sorry. I hope everything works out for you. I'll help you all I can.
I appreciate that, Mr. Collada. Thank you very much.
Sure. Bye-bye.
Good night.
All right, bye-bye.
Okay, so this is a very interesting situation, and I was asking Jim if the media in Chicago or elsewhere became interested in pursuing the story further, would you be willing to talk to them also?
Yeah, if I can get up there, I would.
How about you, Holly?
Sure. It's too bad. I was hoping that maybe Collada could talk to my dad more. I thought that was interesting that they both knew Larry and had been friends with him, because my dad has a few stories about Larry and with Larry that are rather interesting. You know, that he was quite the
further proof
not,
that
not
he was a violent man.
Yeah.
He was bad.
He, and Holly, or all of you who read the book, probably saw in there too that, in addition to Ron Sharp and Pat Freeman and those 1950s murders of the three people in the tavern, he they had to rein him in because he wanted to kill one of the fellow gang members, was very upset when the rug got pulled out from under him because Tony Spilotro wouldn't approve the hit. And
right.
Then he also wanted to murder when Frank killed a government witness. Newman wanted to go on that caper himself, and he wanted to kill the wife. Now, there was no reason to kill the wife.
Oh,
I mean, she might not have been a very nice person. I don't know the lady, but as far as doing any damage, regarding her testimony or anything, she couldn't. She wasn't involved in that and didn't represent a danger. Newman wanted to kill her just to kill her. He didn't like her and wanted to. I mean, he was a scary guy to me.
He got into killing. I mean, it didn't bother him a bit. One time, this black girl come in the bar and borrowed my keys to get in the gravel pit. She was living with a guy down there. And she didn't bring them back in enough time. So me and Ron and there was four of us. Newman went, me and Ron and one more guy. We jumped in Ron's car and went down there. And got my keys back, and yeah, all she was doing was just loading her stuff up like she said and was moving out on this guy. And right away, Newman wanted to kill her, and she had a small kid with her.
Curtis.
What are you talking about? He wanted to kill them both just for the heck of it, for being late, yeah? They didn't bring the keys back on time, man. He said, I'm going to waste them both. And I said, no, you ain't, yeah? And I said, you're crazy. I said, man, I said, I've been working here for 15 years in this gravel pit, you know. And
well,
I got him out of there, but he wanted to knock them both off.
Yeah, what'd you tell him, Dad? You told him, I don't want to get fired. You can't be doing that.
Yeah, yeah,
you're going to get fired.
My job over something like
I got child support pay. You can't be getting me fired.
We've got a few minutes left here. If any of the listeners have a question or comment, you can reach us at 646-478-0982. 646-478-0982. Holly, I'd appreciate it if you or Heidi do end up talking to the police there, if you'd get in touch and let us know how you make out or what is said or what they, you know, what they tell you, what they intend to do.
Well, the little bit that I spoke with them yesterday, they said that I said I don't suppose you guys would give me any information, and they said, well, no, really, we can't, you know, blah blah blah. But they did say that I said, well, you know, you would talk to my dad. They wanted to talk to my dad again. I said, well, it should all be in the file. And he said to me that, 27 years ago, they weren't real good at taking notes and writing stuff down, so it would be really, you know, helpful to them if my dad would speak to them again and tell them, you know.
Oh.
I don't.
Okay, hold on. So we have a caller. Let's see if there's a question here. Hello, caller from 847 area. You're on the air.
Hi, I don't want to interrupt.
Go right ahead.
Heidi. Hi, I'm Heidi. I'm Jim's daughter and Holly's sister.
Hi, Heidi.
Hi, hi, everybody. it's a hometown thing. hi, Paul. How are you?
I'm doing fine, Heidi.
Good. I just wanted to, I don't know if Holly drew a blank on that, but that was Lieutenant Zinke that we had communicated with and that wanted all the information.
Did you sense, Heidi, when talking to the lieutenant, that there is some interest there or no?
Actually, I think there's interest now, and I think that he was interested in the fact that there wasn't so much interest in the past. So,
maybe a little concern as to why nothing was done or nothing pursued?
Correct, because the first time I had called him just simply to find out if the case was still open or if it had been solved, from that moment it had sparked interest, and he had been continuously, repeatedly calling me for information or for somebody to come in and tell them exactly what we knew. So and I didn't know where everybody was at with the entire thing, so I kind of, you know, avoided the situation.
Sure. My thoughts are, you know, again, it seems as though back 27 years ago, there could have been a little more effort made. And I'm wondering, Paul mentioned the Carol Marine being involved in this. If she or her people have been sniffing around McHenry County, I'm wondering if that also is an impetus for them to want to get to the bottom of this thing at this point.
Yeah, I would think so.
I would think so, and I would think as much pressure, the more pressure that's put on it, that would, you know, raise the alert to get it solved, and actually any doubt why it wasn't solved in the past. With all the information that everybody did have, it kind of raises alerts why it wasn't solved in the past.
Well, and I don't know, Heidi, if you were listening when we had Dennis Arnoldy, the retired FBI agent, on, and Frank Collada. Apparently, when Frank gave this information to McHenry County, the face-to-face situation, Larry Newman was locked up in Las Vegas. So if anybody wanted to speak with him, I mean, it wasn't like he was on the lam somewhere and they would have to track him down. He would have been relatively...
Correct.
Now, he may not wanted to have talked to him. He may have told him, I don't want to talk to you. But it appears...
But he was very accessible.
Absolutely. And it appears there was no effort made to contact him, you know. So if that is true, or maybe McHenry County's file would show something different. I don't know. I haven't seen it. But the other thing, you mentioned... something about, well, back then they weren't real good at taking notes and so on. That's, I don't know.
It was only a murder case.
It's not a real good excuse,
yeah.
Huh? Right.
That tends to make me think that maybe the file isn't all that thick.
Yeah, and they had, you know, they've had this many years where Larry Newman was in prison that whole time.
Yeah.
You know.
Well, he was locked up from when Frank rolled in 82. They had him on a gun charge. They stopped him outside a store in Las Vegas, and they found a gun in the vehicle in the glove box. And they knew they had Frank, and they knew that probably they would end up getting a conviction for the murder case. But they used the gun possession by a felon to lock him up and get him off the streets. And until they could pursue the more serious charges. So Larry Newman, I don't think, was ever out.
No.
You know, he was either in prison in Illinois or in locked up in Las Vegas all that time.
Unfortunately, he was out long enough to create, you know, damage that he did.
Yeah, and well, I often wondered, I said, no, here he got sentenced to, I think it was 125 years for that 1950s era triple killing. And how he... I just can't imagine being paroled in what, 15 years or whatever of that.
Yeah, I think it's something like that.
Yeah,
15 years, 16 years.
That he could get out. I mean, I don't know what criteria they use, but
I'll tell you something else though. When I was googling Larry Newman's name, I came across quite a few court records and appeals that he was making even while he was in during this 27 years.
Mm-hmm.
He was quite smart because he has quite a few angles that were shot down by the judge each time. But there's quite a bit. I mean, he never gave up trying to wiggle his way out again, it seems.
Well, yeah, and, you know, Frank told me, he said Larry was, you know, Frank had initially met him in prison in the 60s. And they were they worked at Statesville Penitentiary in Illinois, and they worked in the psychiatric unit in what they called the goon squad. And apparently these guys they'd have to try to corral and subdue psychiatric patients and so forth who were acting up. And I guess Larry was pretty vicious back then. And, of course, he he was in on that triple homicide charge. He was in for that, and he never got any better. I mean, he didn't mellow with age. Apparently, he was just as vicious all his life. And the bizarre thing is, you hear some criminals lead the life they do because out of necessity, you know, broken families and no money, but poor families, that type of thing. Newman's apparently came from a good family, and in fact, his dad had set him up with a trust fund, so he was getting some decent money. You know, he didn't steal or kill because he had to; he liked it.
Yeah,
right.
that's what it appears.
Yeah. Yeah, he's just one of those, like, I guess that's why I did find his name on a serial killer site, too, because he just did it for the fun of it.
Listen, if any of you folks are talking to McHenry County and they would like to get a hold of Frank, please have them contact me. I mean, we would like to help, and as Frank told you and Dennis Arnold told you earlier, anything they can do to help get this thing resolved, they would be happy to do. So if... you know, certainly they're welcome to get a hold of me, and I'll put them in touch with Dennis or Frank or whatever. We'll work something out.
That's fine, and I could totally do that. But I kind of, because I figured they've had so much time now, in my closed-mindedness, I just thought whatever Paul wants, because. You know, I figured I'd let it be his call whether he lets Channel 5 break the story or what, you know.
Yeah.
So, that's why I wasn't volunteering anything extra.
I understand. And then Paul, you said it's going to air on the 25th, tentatively, this Channel 5 thing?
Yeah, I believe the 24th of November. Yeah,
it
so
is.
I'm flying out to Chicago next week to go ahead and to do that interview with Carol. And then I believe the 24th will be airing.
So you're kind of going to hold off on doing anything with McHenry County till after that program? Is that
well? You know, quite honestly, I'm looking for an attorney. I don't think that this should be half stopped in any way. Obviously, there's some things that are questionable, and representation's probably required. The unfortunate thing is, you know, lawyers work for money, not justice.
Right.
And there's not a lot of money, you know, involved in something like this, or if there is, you know, it's an extreme long shot.
Right.
But I made contact with an attorney that wants to meet with me while I'm in Chicago, so hopefully something good will come out of that.
That would be great, and I'm assuming that you at some point would like to have access to the police file on that investigation to see what they actually did or what it says.
Absolutely. I think that's really important to me. I want to get a hold of that file, and actually I would like to get it over to Mr. Arnoldy and have him take a look at it. And you know, being a former FBI agent, he knows what should be in there. And what is in there, and what's not in there, or you know, whatever, you know, we don't know. We have to get a hold of that file.
Yeah, and as I was mentioning, when the lieutenant said, you know, that they weren't very good about notes and stuff back then, it just bothers me a little bit that perhaps there's not a hell of a lot in that file. I hope I'm wrong.
No, and when I heard that, I felt the same way. But I'm not surprised by anything
at this point. Mr. Griffin, have you heard the Gary Gauger story? That's also McHenry County. The whole,
was he the wrongly convicted guy?
Yes,
yeah.
On death row. No. It's McHenry County also. He just put a book out, too. I just got his book, a signed copy, like 2 weeks ago. I'm sending it to my dad. My dad knew his parents who were murdered.
Wow.
Like I said, Jim's got a lot of great stories. He knows everybody. He's everywhere.
You know, Jim, are you still with us?
Yeah, I'm too.
As this thing goes forward, you know, if this thing catches on and it... And the authorities do want to talk to Frank again at some point or whatever, maybe we could end up talking in person, because I bet you and Frank would have a lot to talk about. Apparently you knew at least Newman and maybe some other people that you both knew. And I would love to be a fly on the wall when you guys had a talk.
Yeah.
I thought the same thing. I thought they could have a good chat just about that person in common. I thought that would be interesting.
Listen, we're down to about 20 seconds, so I'm going to have to sign off. I want to thank all of you so much for being on with me tonight and taking your time to call in. And we'll keep tabs on how this goes, and maybe we'll do it again with an update when we have something to report. Again, Paul, thank you very much. Jim, Holly, and Heidi, thanks a million, and we'll talk to you later.
Thank you. Good luck.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye now.
Goodbye.